So yes. It's the 30th of January, 2016, just after 10:45 in the morning.
Yes.
And I'm here, I'm John Batty. Irini Dzordzoglou is also here. And we are in the house of Vic Howarth. Vic, I know you only as Vic, but right. Maybe you could tell us your full name firstly.
My full name is James Victor Howarth, and in this village I am better known by my schoolboy nickname, which is Sam.
Is it? Okay, well, we'll come back to why you were called Sam a little bit later, but
not relevant, really.
Just tell us, Vic, if you don't mind, when were you born?
March 20, 1930.
So that makes you 85 years old? 86 this year.
Well, yes, nearer 86, yes, yes.
And your beautiful wife, Pat, is not here today, but maybe you could also just tell us Pat's full name also.
She's Patricia Mary Howarth, born Balance, B-A-L-L-A-N-C-E, from Grange.
Very good, thank you. Now, what we'd like to do today, Vic, is just hear in your own words some of your memories, your recollections of the village, because you've lived here quite a long time, haven't you? Can you tell us, firstly, were you born in the village?
I was born in this house, yes.
And this house, so let's just get the details of this house. Does it have a number?
No, it has a name, Croft House.
So we're Croft House and Priest's Lane?
Yes.
In Cartmel, and you were born in this house?
Yes.
And did your parents subsequently tell you any stories about your birth?
No.
So you don't have any particular record? Well, you wouldn't remember, of course, but
I remember it well.
What were your parents' names, Vic?
My father was Alfred, and my mother was Edith Marguerite, but known within the family as Daisy. From the Marguerite, I think. Born Stamper in the Sun Inn at Coniston.
She was actually born in the Sun Inn?
She was born in the Sun Inn at Coniston, yes.
And do you remember their birth dates?
My mother was March the 15th.
Which year, Vic?
Oh, that's not easy. Perhaps we can come back to that.
But, yes, of course. And your father?
My father, his was the longest day, June the 21st. And he would be 1890-something, I think.
In the 1890s, okay.
Do you know, they were both Victorians, yes.
Yes. Do you know why they came to Cartmel?
Yes. My father was born and brought up in Milham, and of course the most significant part of his life was that he fought through the First World War from beginning to end. He was a captain in the Lancashire Fusiliers, and he was twice decorated with the military cross. Once on the Somme and once on another battle. When he finally returned to Milham after that, but went to Canada to join his sister and brother-in-law on a ranch in Saskatchewan. And my mother followed him with my brother, who was then 2 years old, it was their intention to settle and ranch in Canada. It didn't work out. The reason being that when they got there, they had a couple of good years sharing this ranch. It's a wheat ranch in Saskatchewan. Followed by 3 terrible years.
Time.
they lost three consecutive years, three crops in consecutive years. One on account of drought, and two where the crop was eaten entirely by locusts. Now, I may have got the wrong way around. The one, it may have been one of locusts and two of drought, I don't know. But they were no, and my mother told me that they tossed a coin on a prairie, on the out on the prairie, whether to return back to Cumberland, as it then was, or to go and fruit farm in California, that was there, and it came down the wrong way, and they came back to Cumberland.
And when they came to Cartmel, do you know, do you remember, or have they told you how old they were, or when that was?
I can get pretty close. I was born here, and therefore it must have been before 1930, and it was probably about 1920. Five or six.
And
they first of all lived on Barngarth.
Yes.
And then moved to here. My father became what was called a rating and valuation officer, a civil servant, to do with collecting and administering the rates for quite a big area, for the Ulverston Rural Council. It was quite a big area around about. That's what he, that is what he did.
So he moved around, his job took him round and about quite a lot.
Well, he used to go around collecting in those days. Yes. Yes, he knew the area very well.
And your mother, did your mother have a job, or was she a housewife?
She was a housewife and assistant to my father. That came about because my grandfather at Millham did that particular job of rating and valuation officer there. My mother became his secretary and then met my father through that, and he followed it. That's how it came about, really.
And Vic, I should have asked you before, but do you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother, Philip, but he died. He was 10 years older than me. I was a mistake, I think, and came rather late in my parents' life. But so I was born 1930. He was born 1919.
So he would have been born when they were still in Canada?
No, he went to Canada as a 2-year-old. So they must have gone to Canada about 1921. He was born November 1919,
right.
November the 6th.
Okay.
He then became an officer in the Bengal Sappers and Miners in the Second World War, the Indian part of the Indian Army.
And Vic, sorry, just to go back to your father, I know I'm moving around a bit. How long did the collection of taxes continue for? Do you remember when it stopped?
It must have been when they came to Cartmel, because when they came back from Canada, they went first of all to Millham, where he had come from, and they... This is a bit vague to me. They farmed or poultry farmed somewhere very close to Millham. I think they called it Red Bank, but where it was I don't know. And that sort of disappeared as he got this job to do, which he was quite familiar with through my grandfather doing it at Millham. And it was in this area.
So he was collecting taxes?
He was collecting taxes.
And were those income taxes or local taxes?
No, rates.
Local rates?
Local rates, yes.
So that's the equivalent of the council tax, probably, as we know it today.
It is exactly that, yes.
Yes. Okay. Do you have any memories as to how much the rates were in those days?
No, not whatever. No.
Okay. So, Vic, what are your first memories of the village?
Well, strangely, I actually have... this is not a memory of the village. I have a couple of pram memories as a child. I've tried to think back as much as I could. I made a little hobby, not a hobby of it, but occasionally I used to. And I actually can remember two occasions when I was in a perambulator, one down that room and one in Grange, being pushed by a lady called Miss Lancaster, who lived on Barngarth. But that's nothing to do with the village. My first memories, I think, of the village would be when I started at the school, when I was... I know I started a bit early. I think we started school at 5 or 6 in those days.
And was that the primary school?
Yes, it was a primary school.
Which is where it still is today?
Yes.
So you didn't have very far to go to school?
No.
And how old would you have been about, Vic, when you started at school?
5 or 6.
Do you remember any of the teachers from those days?
Yes, the teacher was called Miss Steele.
Steele?
Steele, S-T-E-E-L. Miss Steele was an infant teacher. There were three teachers. There were three classrooms. And the middle one was... the teacher was called Miss Brennan, who came from Grange. And she left and was succeeded by a lady who came from Barrow called Mrs. Dilks. And the headmaster, who had the big... school, the big classroom, with the older boys, he was Geoffrey Castle.
Geoffrey Castle?
Castle, yes.
About how many pupils were there, Vic?
This is just a guesstimate. There was, I would think, 50.
And were they all from the village, or did they come from the surrounding area?
From the surrounding area, far away as Field Broughton, none that way. There was a school at Allithwaite. So it was the west side of the valley up there and Field Broughton. There's nobody living on the east side. There were a couple of girls from the Hags Lane, so the east side as well. But there was a school at Grange, so it didn't go over the top. So it's Cartmel Parish, really, which extends all that area. Yes.
What was a typical school day like?
It changed, of course. In the infants' class, we sat at little tables, I think it was mostly...
Did you have lessons? Were there formal lessons?
Yes, as far as you can have formal lessons with 6 to 10 years. We had cards with spelling, pink cards, this long and this wide. You had to spell things that were pictured on the top of them.
So there'd be a picture and you'd have to write the name of the...
Yes, that sort of thing. That was, I can't remember when you sort of emerged from the infants class to the middle class, but then the middle class with the teachers, they were more formal lessons.
Right.
Reciting tables, all that kind of thing.
Did you have your lunch at school?
No, because I just walked home.
But some children presumably could do that if they came from further away.
I don't think there were any. There were no school dinners in those days at all. So if they came from Field Broughton, they would probably bring a sandwich box. Derek Birch will tell you better than that. I don't think there were any. There wasn't a dining room. There was milk in the morning. It was nearly always sour. I hated that milk. It was beastly. Because it wasn't. Sour is the wrong word, but it was warm and nasty. Jeff Castle was really quite. An enlightened and rather modern teacher, I would say, and he was certainly technologically inclined. And what we had was a movie cinema in the big classroom. The cinema was on a sort of mezzanine just behind the front door, up, and it shone out. And for some reason, I think I remember it was Thursday, we had films.
What kind of films? Were they educational films?
Oh, yes. Yes, they weren't. They weren't. Yes, they were educational films. The only one that I can actually recall was a film about Germany. And I can only imagine that it was something like a... travelogues. It was that kind of film show, travelogues and educational of a sort.
Do you remember the names of any of your fellow pupils from those days?
Oh yes, lots of them.
Can you give us some names?
Probably my best playmate at the time was called Frank Laisby.
Laisby?
Yes, he lived in the cottages down there. There was quite a big family, actually. There was Doris.
And Vic, sorry, because nobody, when they listen to this, will know where you were pointing. That's down Priest Lane towards the Priory.
Yes, it's the row, little row of cottages, and I think they're called Church View, facing south.
And Laisby was L.A. S-E-B-Y or L-A-Z?
L-A-I.
Oh, L-A-I-S-B-Y.
Yes.
Okay.
He had two younger brothers who were twins, Dennis and Brian, an elder brother called Fred and an elder sister called Doris. How many does that make?
Five in total.
Yeah, that's right. That was a lot. There were lots more. I could probably... pick up a lot of names given a bit more time.
Well, another time maybe we'll come back and ask you if you've remembered any more. And so after you...
Yes, yeah, okay.
So after you came back from school, Vic, in the afternoon, or at the weekends when there was no school, how would you spend your time around the village?
In the sort of infant period, and we were talking about it here in the garden or in the field behind, and there was quite a lot of toing and froing between the different families of kids. So it would be playing with a ball or playing catch or that's about it. I can't remember much else of what we did.
How far would you wander away from home by yourself?
Quite a way. It's something that impressed me very much when I grew up, when I had my own kids, and I discovered that neighbours around wherever we lived were very reluctant to let kids go out. I had a complete freedom of the valley, and so did any of us. Yes, I would certainly wander away across down. Past Castle Meadows, as it is called, where the lake was. And there's a river down there and an old stone bridge. So we were, you can't see it from here, but there. Park Wood, the park, that was probably the main playground for us, really.
Where is that?
The Carmel Park, which people would call the racecourse.
Yes.
But it really was common ground for everybody. And that's where we played, mainly.
The racecourse was there, though, wasn't it, in those days?
The racecourse, yes, the races took place on Whit Monday. That was the only, there was only one day, and it was Whit Monday. And there was the Cartmel Show, which was where it is now, on the same park. That occurred on the first Wednesday in August, as it still does. The interesting thing about that was that the race course wasn't permanent. There was a grandstand and all the railings defining the racing, and for the agricultural show there was a circle and tents, and there was another grandstand there, and all of that was there for that one day and taken down and stored by Mr. Hume and his son Horace, who were carpenters, and their job was to erect all that stuff for one day each year, well, for 2 days. It wasn't the same stuff, actually. Lots and lots of planks and posts that were erected, and of course they took quite a long time, and that was a marvellous play area for all of us, because we could get among these planks and build, erect them, and make seesaws or even play games, a strange game called Nerky Off.
Sorry, could you say that again?
It was called Nerky Off.
Nerky? I don't know that word.
It was a kind of rough and tumble hide and seek where somebody was hit and had to get from A to B without being tackled or caught by dodging in and out of all these planks and heaps and so on.
How would you spell Nerky? Just so we
N-E-R-K-Y.
That's how we'll spell it. Okay.
That's how I would spell it. I don't know. That's as far as I know, simply a local name.
And how old would you have been about at this time?
That was from... that went on until one became a senior at the school, or beyond. I mean, everybody could just join in.
But presumably you'd be about 7 or 8.
Oh, yes.
Around about that age.
Yes.
What other games did you get up to with your friends, Vic?
The best game of all was guinea pig.
Now, you have to tell me how to play guinea pig as well.
Right. I don't know why kids don't play guinea pig anymore. It's a marvellous game. A guinea pig, every boy had a guinea pig in his pocket. It's a piece of wood, maybe, let's say, we better use imperial units because 4 inches long.
Okay.
And it's about inch and a half in diameter. So it's a little lump of wood. And with a penknife, you can carve the end to form a lip. So, right?
Yes.
And then you have another stick cut out of the hedge or somewhere, about the size of a cricket stump, 2.5 feet long. And you scratch a rectangle in the grass on a hard bit, and then you put the pig down on there, whack it with a stick, and it jumps up in the air, and then you hit it like that, as far as you can.
So I'd better just be clear, because nobody can see the movements that you're making, Vic, while you're
exactly,
telling us.
Exactly, no. So you
put the pig on the grass.
On the ground.
On the ground. Okay, you whack it.
On the lip.
On the lip.
Of course, it then jumps up in the air.
So it springs up in the air.
Yes.
And then you're ready and you...
And you have to whack it while it's in the air to hit it as far as you can.
And what did you call the long piece? There was a piece of wood as long as a cricket stump, 2.5 feet long or
yes,
so.
Yes.
What did you call that? Did it have a name?
No, I don't think it had a name.
Okay. And how far would you be hitting one, the pig?
If you got a good contact, it would go 20 yards or longer, 30. Right, if you didn't, most times you missed completely. So if it fell back in the square, and if you missed it and it fell back in the square, then you have another go.
I see.
If it fell outside the square, you're out. And if it fell so that it was on the line, that was a very prolific source of dispute and about whether it was in or out. And so you divided yourselves, whoever was there divided themselves into teams, and it was remarkably informal because there weren't equal numbers in two teams, because kids would come on, join one or the other team, and others would go away to do a paper round, and this game would go on. It never finished, I mean, it didn't matter. So, but then, having hit the pig, and it, somewhere, the fielding side, there was an inside where everybody took their turns to be do the hitting, and there was the other side were in the field. If a fielder could catch the thing in flight, of course you were out, batter was out, and had to hand over to the next one. If it was on the ground and still moving, you could pick it up and throw it back towards the base, or even kick it back if it was still moving. If it, once it was stationary, it had to stop. But once again, that was a prolific source of contention, whether it was moving or not. So having hit the pig and it arrived and stationary somewhere, the batter would then put his stick halfway across the little square we talked about, and it was up to any member or any number of members of the fielding side to step it out. The batsman would claim a score. Right, so if I've hit the pig and it's come to rest 20 feet away, or I would say three or something like that, and if they could stride it out in a running stride between the pig and get over the thing, then I was out, and the three was added to the score of the fielding side. If they couldn't, then I got the three and had another go.
Right. Well, at the end of the game, there was a winning team, presumably.
I don't think it never ended. It just went on.
Until it went dark.
Until it got dark, yes, yes, yes. That was the... And teams were of any size and any age. But it was a marvellous game. You didn't need any kit or special clothes or anything. You could do it anywhere.
And Vic, was this game only played by boys, or were the girls
no,
playing?
No, it was mainly boys. Some girls would join in, but not many.
Right, okay. What other games were there?
Well, as I say, a guinea pig went on until it got dark, or else somebody lit a fire and somebody showed up with a packet of woodbines.
What age were they smoking woodbines? You won't get into trouble for telling me.
Oh, well, I wouldn't expect to. I suppose kids of 10, 12, 15.
So these were outdoor games, Vic, weren't they? What about indoor, when the weather was bad or if it was dark? What would you do? Did you have indoor games that you played?
I suppose everybody had their own. I was especially interested in aeroplanes. I wanted to build model aeroplanes. But that was not... I'm now... By that, you know, you need to be... to have certain manipulative skills to do that, and you need to know a little bit how to adjust wings and tails to make them fly. And that didn't come on until... I was doing it at Cartmill School, so it was about, by the time I was 11 and went to the grammar school, I'd built a few, but I wasn't very good at it, and okay. I didn't have a lot of success until later. Now, other games, I can't help you there. I suppose people would paint and draw.
Now, you mentioned a paper round, Vic. So... Who would be doing the paper round, and where would the round be, and what was the paper?
Well, I'm talking about delivering stuff around the village or any other activity that took them away from playing guinea pig for one reason or another. somebody would have to go home or whatever.
But was there a local paper? Was there a local paper?
I'm trying to think. I think there must have been a Grange and Cartmel News. Yes, there was. I think it might have been called the Grange and Cartmel News. I wasn't reading the papers. I only think that because I do remember the local correspondent who handed in news about the cricket scores or the that sort of thing. I think there was a thing called the Grange and Cartmel News.
Did people?
I forgot to tell you the other thing. Once there was a sort of rite of passage by the time you got into long trousers and you were able to join the Working Men's Club, the Institute as it was called, and that's where boys spent their summer holidays, upstairs where there were two billiard tables.
Now, where was that, Vic?
It's that very ugly building, still there, in opposite the church gates.
That we call the Village Institute?
Yes. That was there. There were two billiard tables upstairs. And all the men would go there and sit around watching at night and playing. You had to take your turn. So that is certainly where one would spend one's teenage summers and winters and evenings, yeah.
So tell us a bit more about that. Did he call it, you described it as a working men's club?
I think that's what it called itself, but that didn't mean very much.
And what else did it have apart from the billiard tables?
Well, it had a dartboard and it had what they call the reading room. That was downstairs, where there were magazines and papers. And where the hairdresser now is was called the library, and it was visited by presumably the county library vans, and they'd change the books. This came round, I don't know, once a month or something like that, and change them all. And so it had the library, the reading room, the billiard tables upstairs, and another little room upstairs for where there's a dartboard and playing cards, and probably dominoes for all I know. But yes.
Any food and drink?
No.
Nothing at all?
No, there's nothing of that kind of thing.
And who was the organiser? Who was the proprietor of the club?
Well, I don't say the proprietor, but there was a caretaker, Mr. Bell, and his wife, looked after the place, opened it when it was locked and swept the stairs, looked after it. I mean, I would call him a concierge, Mr. Bell, who lived there.
I was curious to understand who owned the building in those days and who was responsible for it.
I simply don't know.
No.
I don't know.
Well, as we've started to do a little tour of the village, Vic, because you've mentioned the cottages down Churchview, Priest Lane, and we've now moved into the square. So what was different in those days compared to the village as we would see it today?
The geography is very much the same. There has been some building, but mainly on the outskirts. It looks very much like it did before. What is different about it is there's a lot more money here. It was not very prosperous. I'm talking, I suppose, although I wasn't aware of it at the time, it was in the Depression.
What were
the houses are now painted with new windows. It looks much nicer than it did. There were some pretty awful bad parts of the village. But it looks much the same in geographically. The street plan is the same because it's a higgledy-piggledy, the roof village anyway. You know, there's no consistency with the roof lines wherever you look at it. Some set back and some are brought forward, and the roofs are like this. But it's all the same, but it's better kept. And the other big difference, and this is the really big difference, it was a self-propelled, self-contained community that had one of everything. It had a two grocers, and every aspect of the building trades were here: plumbers, painters, bricklayers, electrician. As I've said before, perhaps to you, you could have built a wall around Cartmel and it wouldn't have made any difference. It could have been, it was a self-contained community. It had all the, it had a cricket club, a football club, a women's institute, mother's union, it had a dramatic society, a choir.
So if we just were to walk around the square, what would the buildings have been in the square? Because I think somebody told me once there was a bank.
Yes. It was the Westminster, what it was in those days called the District Bank, but it was gradually taken over by this and that, and it would be the Westminster Bank. But it was a bank that was only open one day a week.
Which building was that, Ben?
It was the building, I think it's called the Bank, is it?
Bank House?
No, it's not.
Pat, tell us. Pat is shaking her head.
No.
It's called the Circle in the Square, isn't it?
The Circle in the Square?
I think it's Circle. It is. It's the one that Gary had. That was the District Bank.
Yes.
The square thing, and then right opposite there's an arch.
Yes.
And then there's a biggish, more substantial house, and then the archway that you go through to, not the archway to go through to the Police Lane, but the archway down to a little ginnel, and then there's a little tiny spot house with a window, four windows.
It's called Bank Court, I think.
Bank Court.
Yes.
Yes. Bank Court is the opening, like a ginnel. And the Bank Court is behind,
it's got a signpost down, like a pump signpost.
It's immediately opposite, on the opposite
fish
side, lamps. And facing the
fish lamps.
No, I'm the hotel.
The Priory Hotel.
Yes, it's immediately opposite and facing.
Yes,
the Priory Hotel, and it was probably only, it didn't have much of a frontage, there was a door.
So, were all, because you mentioned all the trades and the shops, were they all dotted around the village, or were they all around the square?
No, they were dotted all over the place, but the trades didn't have shops. The shops were, there's a shop where the shop is now, right? Sid Hull's grocer's shop. Is
it? Sid Hull's?
Sid Hull. No,
oh,
Hull.
Sid Hull.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Hull had that shop. There was a...
That was a sandwich shop.
It's now the sandwich shop, yes. Right.
The sandwich shop.
And the other grocer was Henry Teasdale, who had the shop which is now called the Village Shop, the Sticky Toffee Pudding Shop. It was also then the post office.
Rogan and Company. It's another shop.
The shop which is called Hales.
Rogan and Company.
Well, where Rogan and Company now are. That,
yes.
You're saying, Pat, that used to be a shop?
Yes, it was a shop.
What kind of a shop was that?
It was a small general store run by Mrs. Warriner, and it sold sweets, cigarettes, and local produce from farmers. So it was a...
Now, one
not
of your...
Not much of a shop, really, at all, but...
one of your neighbours here lives in a house called the Old Police Station.
Yes.
Was it a police station in those days, or was
it a
private house?
Not in my recollection. It was. It had. I don't know when it ceased to be a police station. Probably when they built the new police station. So, but it was a police
station. Sorry, Vic, which new police station?
Well, it's not there anymore either. So,
where was it?
It was the end of the terrace houses. You know the Friends Meeting House on Hags Lane,
yes.
Right? So go up from the Friends Meeting House. There's, I think, two quite small cottages, and then a row of a terrace, and the police house was the end house at the.
So opposite the doctor's surgery.
Yes.
And was there a policeman permanently living there?
Yes.
Do you remember his name?
Mr. Key. K-E-Y, yes.
And would he...
And I can tell you something else.
Please do.
Somewhere in that garden, there's an incendiary bomb. Or...
Tell us a bit more about the incendiary bomb.
Oh. Well, in... Cardinal got its air raid like everybody else. There was no we're now talking about 1941, something like that. There was no damage actually in the village itself, but Allithwaite and Grange got it. They were some bombs, but a lot of bombs were fell on the fell, on Hampsfell, and of course the next day we were all off there finding bits and bobs, and I found an unexploded incendiary bomb. Came proudly back with it, and was it? I was waylaid by Jeff Castle, the headmaster, who took it off me. Well, he didn't take it off me. He ordered one of the older boys, because I was about 11 at that time, to take it to the police station. And Mr. Key said, "I don't know what to do. What can I do?" So they took it all and put it in the garden. But that's something else.
So even though it was live, was it still live?
Yes, it must have been, because it hadn't. There were lots of, all over the world, lots of little white piles of magnesium that had burned, and up there, this one just hadn't exploded. And there were old tails, they had steel tails, you know, those bombs.
So while we're on the subject of the war in the early 1940s, what was life like during those days?
For me, for children, I don't think they noticed very much. We never thought there was going to be, we never imagined that it wouldn't end successfully. But of course, for parents, for my mother, whose elder brother was gone, and of course she'd gone through the First World War before. So it made a big difference to them, and of course there were everything was rationed, and a lot of things didn't exist. There were no things like sweets or candy or things of that kind.
How often would there have been an air raid?
There were here quite a number, but just here in this valley. There was about, as I recall, there were several nights when we hid under the table downstairs. They were after Barrow, the dockyard at Barrow and all the naval ships there. But like a lot of bombers, as soon as they got near the flak, they dropped their bombs wherever they were and headed off home. And so there were bombs that side of the valley, this side of Grange and Allithwaite.
Was there any damage, any serious damage done around the village?
Not in Carton itself, no. There was in Allithwaite, several houses were demolished, and in Grange too.
Do you remember when the war finished, was there a big celebration in the village, any kind of street party or anything like that?
Yes and no. There were not a big celebration like a street party, but there were quite a number of other things like that. There'd been a lot of saving up for the boys returning and that sort of thing. So there would be, I can't actually recall, but I'm sure there were get-togethers, but it wasn't street parties, and no noisy celebrations as far as I know. They came back in dribs and drabs, of course, when they were demobilised.
How did you celebrate when your brother came home?
Not at all, as far as I remember. Just a family reunion.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When he came home...
Do you want to switch off?
When he came home, he came home later, didn't he? Because he brought Wilma with him. And they had...
Yes, that's right. Of course, when the war finished, my brother was with the Indian Army, and he had to go back to India. And by which time he had met his future wife, and they married. And when they came back here, it was two of them.
I see.
Yes.
Okay. Vic, we'd mentioned smoking earlier on, that some of the boys would get up to, they'd start smoking fairly on. What about drinking? Was drinking ever a practice in those years, teenage years?
Teenage years, what it amounted to, I wouldn't call it drinking, but older boys, I particularly remember this in the winter when we were certain fields which were good sledging fields when we go sledging. The Pig and Whistle had a little, that's the pig pub, it was called the Devonshire Arms, I think. But it was always known as the Pig and Whistle. The Pig and Whistle had a hole in the wall at the back, down a little. They went down around the side, and there was where boys could buy cider. I mean, I'm sure quite illegally, but so you could get a bottle, one of those biggish bottles of white waste cider, and take it back to the sledging field, and it got passed around like a joint.
So at what age would you have started going to the pub, or did you start going to the pub?
I used to go to the pub not till I was demobbed from the Air Force, so that would be
20s by that age?
Yes.
By that time?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
If I went to the pub before that, it would be because I was taken by the rest of the cricket team. I was probably the youngest member of the cricket team at the time and not old enough to go to the pub anyway. But of course, cricket matches always finished up in the pub. And so I got to be in the pub.
And did they finish up in the Pig and Whistle or one of the others?
No, the King's Arms.
So were the four pubs then that there are now?
Yes, there were. It's astonishing that they've survived. There were the four pubs. The Cavendish Arms, the King's Arms, the Royal Oak and the Pig and Whistle. The Pig and Whistle, I think, was really an alehouse. It wasn't a fully blown pub selling spirits. I'm not quite sure about that, but all the others were proper pubs.
And did they have rooms? Were they inns in that sense, where people could stay the night?
I think the King's Arms had probably... they would be able to take one guest, I think. Don't think the others did at all, or they may have done. I can't remember. They certainly weren't hotels in the modern sense.
Vic, you said the pub was Devonshire Arms, but it was known as the Pig and Whistle. And you were Victor, but everybody knows you as Sam. And we understand that there were lots of alternative names about.
That is absolutely right, yes.
Why?
I can't say why, but it was a convention. The Cavendish Arms was always referred to as the Kremlin.
Why?
Why? I don't know. I mean, the Cavendish Arms, some boys sometimes went to, the people, it's a sort of rite of passage. You when you get to the pub-going age, I think you would tend to go to the Cavendish Arms first. And the Cavendish Arms in those days was a sort of farmer's pub. It didn't have a bar. It was a lot of little rooms, and they were little rooms. They were probably, you'd have got three of them in here. Little rooms off a corridor. And they had these cast iron filigree tables and chairs, chairs with one short leg, that sort of place. And so you didn't stand at a bar, you had to go to another place, which was one of the corridors as a hole, and the beer was in a little room behind, and you asked for, you ordered, asked for a pint or three pints if it was a group, and stood around and paid at this little window in the wall. And then Mr. Irvin? Yes. Would Mr.
the same as me,
Joe Irvin.
Yeah, but if the tremor, just like me, I know what you're going to say.
Well, go on, Vic, just finish what you finish your thoughts.
He would then bring you the beer to your little room. Joe Irvin, he was so doddery, and he used to walk along with two pints at each other. And by the time he got to your table, half of it was on the floor behind. That was.
So, did you, by calling it the Kremlin, did you mean to give it an air of forbiddenness or very austere or very, because it doesn't sound a very welcoming place. I'm trying to understand the thinking behind the name.
Well, no, I don't think there was any thinking about it. To be honest, I don't know. I don't think it had any significance.
Right. So what other things had other names?
I don't think the other pubs did have names. The Royal Oak was always the Oak, and the King's Arms was always the King's. The Pig and Whistle, of course, was one with a name that didn't really belong to it.
And that, you said, was called the Devonshire Arms. Was that the proper name?
Yes. Yes, it was.
But even then, people would call it the Pig and Whistle?
Yes, yes.
And when it comes to people's names, why would people have two names?
Nicknames?
Yes.
I can't say why. It was a custom.
In your case, why were you known as
Sam?
Well,
I know why I was called Sam, because my mother told me. In that house across there, there was a family called Burton, and their son was Sam Burton.
On the corner of Priest Lane and...
No, it's the house, the one immediately up there, it's called Littlecroft, and the house, home cottage it's called. It's the biggest house of this terrace. Sam Burton was a good bowler, and he played cricket, and my father was captain of the cricket club, so we had a bit of a... And as a biggish toddler, I was sort of rather hero worship Sam Burton. So I used to, when we were playing cricket or whatever down in the back, I would run around saying, "I'm Sam," and that's how I came to have that name. So my mother told me.
And Vic, so we're talking a little bit about the houses. What do you know of the history of this house?
All I know of the history of this house is that it was originally two cottages, and I think it was probably the first house up on Priest Lane, because all these houses have got croft in there. White croft, stone croft, little croft, green croft, and this is Croft House. and that field and this house were an item at that time. It's no longer, because the field got separated. When
you mean that they belonged to the same owner?
Yes, yes, yes. All that, my father rented this house for many years, and he bought it when the owner, Mr. Burroughs, died, and his family didn't wanted to get rid of it, so my father bought it.
Did Mr. Burroughs live in the village also?
Mr. Burroughs, no. He must have been a widower and was a lodger in St. Noel's, in Dick Noel's house. He lodged in Cartmel, but I don't know how he came to be to own this.
But do you know about the age of the house?
Yeah, no, I know it became a house in around about 1895. That's when the two cottages became Croft House. We have got a photograph of when it was two cottages. It was a pretty tumble-down looking place, but it had essentially the same... Are you going to get it? It had essentially the same shape and size and position as it did then.
But they were, those two cottages were private residences, weren't
they? Oh, right? Yes, yes, yes. So it was in the last decade of the 19th century that it was converted. And you can detect in places parts of the original cottages.
Okay. Pat's just looking for the photograph. So it'd be very interesting to see that. Vic, we've been going for about an hour already, yeah. And I think we've only just started in some ways. I think there could be a lot more, but maybe because the first hour is up, it's probably a good time to have a break now. Would it be possible to continue? Not today, necessarily,
yes,
but maybe another time next weekend?
Yes, yeah.
Because I think there's so much more that you can tell us, but we can only go for so long, I think,
well,
before...
Well, we've actually jumped about a bit, actually. We don't have a truly chronological order. We spent a lot of time talking about the period I don't remember very well when I was very small. Later years, I remember much better.
Yes, and we want to hear about cockfighting and... everything.
I can't tell you much about cockfighting because I know it occurred, but I never saw one. And it didn't take place in my time within the village. It was pretty secret. I do know that cockfights were known to happen.
So what I'll do is I'll stop the recording there.
And
say thank you very much so far for giving us your time and. For the sake of this record, we're going to continue at a later stage.
Whenever. I'm happy. I'm quite pleased to do it, in a way. It makes me think a bit harder.
Good.
I can't tell you much about hound trailing, either, which I think is quite an interesting part of the... Go on, sorry.
So I'm going to stop the recording, Vic, and we'll restart another time soon.
I hope.
I'm just going to stop it now.
Oh,
okay?
Right.